But I like this. Okay. Okay. So we're trying. Good morning, online students. I think for you it's now 8 o'clock in the evening or later. Did you hear this? So we crawled out of our beds in order to talk about content analysis in digital forensics. And content analysis, we mean the analysis of images, videos, sound in forensics investigation. And the question is, why do we need this? And can we relate some of the press and news articles related to it? So we had two very good and concrete contributions. One was related child pornography or pornographic material. We have video surveillance cameras, for instance, in a crime robbery. We can also talk about runaway cars. It's not only in the bank, but it's also the car that has been used to run away. We consider the content analysis of images, for instance, to determine locations where an image has been taken. For example, if the image was taken with the Berliner Fernsehturm in the back, then we may know it was from Berlin or from Paris or whatever. That's why we need content analysis. For location analysis, do we only need content, or can we do it easier? Pictures often have GPS coordinates included. So, but some cameras turn it off, or some cloud services wash GPS, so then we fall back to analyzing the content. So for today, I would like to give you a flavor on what image content analysis is, why it's good for, and I like to open and to broaden you a little bit the mind, because there are much more topics going into the topic. What we see is that content analysis so far, it's not in the primary focus on the digital forensics units. Most of them are focusing on the traditional metadata in images and videos, such as locations, metadata like cameras or timestamps in the material. But we see that in particular related to the pornographic cases, content analysis becomes more and more important, and that's why we include one lecture in the course. At the end of the course or at the end of the lecture, I would appreciate feedback whether you think we should turn this into a specialization like I think many of you take the malware course with you, so that we dedicate a whole course only on the topic. So this is for us also experimenting, whether this is interesting for you. We believe there's a need, but if nobody takes it, then we don't need to spend the effort. Okay? So the lecture or the slide material that I am presenting you today are from colleagues I have been working with while I'm from Germany. The content is still up to date, so because the fundamentals don't change, and I think they did a very good job in collecting very exciting material, so that I'm going to show it with you today. So honor to Jana Dittmann, Klaus Vielhauer, and Rainer Kreuzburg from Germany for setting up the slides. So I would like to in particular focusing on part 1 and 2, image forensics, audio. We mainly miss the introduction or the signal processing, which I would develop when we are turning this into an extended field. But you can imagine audio analysis. We use Skype, we use mobile phones. Speaker recognition would be a similar important field. So, but for today, only part one and two. So, you had heard introduction to information security and introduction to digital forensics. So many concepts in content analysis are, of course, are extended from the field of introduction to information security and forensics. And why do we need, in the first aspect, not only the analysis of images and video, but why also do we need to secure it? And the typical forensics principles that we have take care for evidence integrity, chain of custody, and so on applies also to image material. What we see here in the picture is one of the very early searching or manipulating of image material. Which is nothing that comes in the, let's say, digital age, but what dates back to 19, or at least we have samples available, what dates back to 1917, where in the Russian Revolution, Lenin, Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, has been giving a speech, and in order to make the whole speech for using it in propaganda, the image has been manipulated, because later on this was found as the original. So image manipulation has been taken care in order to make the scene more dangerous and so on. So what we see, it's not only it's not always a crime, sometimes it's propaganda, and we see a lot of manipulations, not only in recent elections, but also in history, that in particular media improves, enhances pictures by taking out parts of it. And the question is, if it's only for media, is it ethical to do it? Or can we use image manipulation, for example, also to to change the truth or to have alternative facts? Another example is where videos has been manipulated, taking out evidence. And this can be, for example, crucial when it comes to an accident or the reconstruction of an accident. Yeah, it's not only pornography or bank robberies. It can be as simple as accidents and the reconstruction of evidence of accidents, which is a major problem or major challenge, for example, if accidents have been fatal, and when the question is under which condition happened the accident, who did the main mistake, and so on. Also for insurance purposes, as an example. So image content analysis has a lot of implications that go broader than just our traditional field of digital forensics, but since we capture digital images, it falls into the domain of digital forensics experts. So, and this you can think by now, because you are students in information security. For all images, we have to take into account confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And in particular, talking about that material, image or video material is later used in a court of law as evidence, integrity is a main requirement. And yes, of course, there was a buzzword already in the room. We can use steganography. We cannot use steganography to share information, but also to hide information in order to have the proof of truth or original data. More during the ongoing topic. And for the extended CIA aspects or confidentiality, integrity, authentication helps us to support and ensure integrity and authenticity of the material. For images, the same as general information security aspects, we have the different attack models, and this is included here in order to remind you that attack models don't play a role in general data, be it email or be it written documents, but in the same for image and video material, or if we extend later on to voice material. As you know, attacks for changing and manipulating material can be differentiated in active and passive. And the task would be to, for instance, interpret what does it mean what does it mean for images? What would be, for instance, a man in the middle reading data packages or analysis of data traffic mean in the terms of images? Can you come up with an example? Be creative. Because if we write it only on the board, then it's low battery. There's somebody else tired. Yes. Yes. My bring my back. My. Just my back. Yeah. In my back. It doesn't help you. In my back, if Slobodan is there, in my back. So, man in the middle attack. What would it be for images? I have the picture taken from Lady Di on the beach in the bikini. The ultimate picture. Or now Kate. What would be a man in the middle attack? Yes. Yes, this is what I want. Yes, exactly. I mean, this is the core for forensics. You have to have the criminal mind. You need to be creative. You will be a good cop. Don't change sides. Yeah? Okay, now it's no signal because we need to, what else? Yes.
Because you can do that with images too, if you work with a few. And in the way, you may have worked on this with an image in it.
Okay, you use the image and. Yeah.
Yeah, you roll for it. So yeah.
You draw me a beard or whatever.
Yeah.
Good. This would be the active. So then we have passive and active. What else? Yes. So we had some very criminal minds in the room. Lasse, you missed. Thank you. I have been working so long last night. So we have analyzed image video streams, and we have creating new images and sent by emails. And the taxonomy for attacks, incidents, and events, we use in the content analysis the same like in the general information security. So there's nothing new. And please bring your knowledge, what you learned in information security, now also to this domain. So it is always the same. And then, of course, the extension of it. So what are general approaches for the authentication of image and video material? What are ways to actively manipulate images and videos in order to allow better authentication? What are passive ways, and what are other approaches in order to analyze manipulated images and videos afterwards? So for the sake of the following, it's very difficult for me to always say images and videos. I like you when I say images or use images in the following, that you use the same technologies can be directly or with small modifications can be applied to videos, because videos are just a sequence of still images where you have, for instance, 20 or 30 frames per minute. So, yes? Technically, it's a sequence of images. And from the image or from the analysis techniques, you would analyze each image in the video by itself. But of course, when you have certainly 30 images per minute of one scene, then you would see how my hand is going to be moved, because 30 pictures are taken during the time interval. This allows you, let's say there's the trick is only to take several still images of the same scene over a time period, and then increased number of images allow you to kind of track or to incorporate a time component and those to track moving objects and changing behavior. If nothing moves in the scene, then you have 30 pictures of the same scene. Yeah. So I'm using for the sake because it's very difficult to speak images, but the images can be still images or moving images in videos. Okay? Just so that we are clear, and if there's a main difference, then I will point it out. So, how can we support a better authentication of images? For instance, to see whether an image is original or not. So there are two ways to take care for it on a high level. This is steganography and digital watermarking, which is the introduction of or the slight manipulation of image content in order to identify whether image content is manipulated in a later point in time. Passive approaches are cryptography and perceptual hashes. This very much relates on what you have heard to Slobodan. You can do this with a Word document, but you can do it in a similar way also to an image. For forensics, we have usually not the are not in the advantage that somebody has by purpose taken care that information is incorporated into the image, like in watermarking and steganography. So we have to conduct our analysis after somebody has manipulated an image, and we have no prior information put into the image, like for instance some simple bit changes in the data matrix. So in more detail, steganography requires the prior knowledge on how information is going to be put into the image. And when we talk image, then I'm going to into the details in the second half of the lecture. So in digital image is primarily a matrix. You have looked in the debugger in an image once? Not?
We should do this.
I bring you in the break. I had an aha effect when I started image processing, and I have some toys on my desk that helps to understand. So a digital image is mainly a matrix of pixels. Pixel is picture elements, like in a mosaic. You can imagine it, the mosaic. I go into details in the second half. Where you start usually all image formats start in the upper left corner, where this pixel is pixel 0, 0, like in a matrix, and then you have image width -1 and image height -1 picture elements, like in a mosaic. And then the image elements are going to be stored in a vector. At the end, it's just a vector of the lengths zero, zero until width times height. And then all values for each image element are stored 0 until 0 width -1. And then you have, this is this one. This one would be 1, 0. So you have kind of, this way you are running through the image. Okay? We look more into detail. I have more of this. And watermarking and steganography means, for example, that you manipulate those image elements in this vector. Now, for instance, if you have easier understanding, we just take a gray value image with 8-bit, which is quite simple to understand. And let's say if this is a black pixel, then we have the value 0. If this is a white pixel, we have the value 255 for an 8-bit image. And watermarking, for instance, let's assume we have here a pixel, it's gray, 50% gray. I mean, you may have seen this from Word. If you say 50% gray, would be a gray value 127. So, and watermarking would be a very simple watermarking, would be, for instance, that you flip only 1 bit. So instead of let's assume flipping 1 bit, this would be, until and so on, you would change the last bit, and 2, 0 is 0. Is 0. No. You can flip the last bit, which is either 1 or 0, and then you would have a difference between 255 or 254. So for the human eye, it's not visible at all. But if you agree with your counterpart that you have flipped the last bit on certain positions in the image, then you easily can hide information or communicate information. The big problem is if somebody does a blurring or a smoothing filter, it will break, right? Very easily. So the first thing is, from those easy ways, we have the possibility to include information or do a watermarking into the image, but some of the techniques, like the lower bit manipulation on particular or pre-agreed positions, are fragile, because as soon as somebody applies an image filter, they are going to break. More advanced techniques would survive those image manipulations, and we call them robust watermarking. How it functions, it's too much for the lecture today. So this is something I could share with you once we would have a full course. So, but then you have a feel on how watermarking and steganography functions. So, I'm not talking about crypto. This you have heard all about from Slobodan. Approximate hash function, similar, also exists for images. Exact hash functions, crypto hashes can be also applied for images. Depends on the application. And now I strongly encourage you, everything you have learned from Slobodan in the crypto class, please also think not only emails, but also images and video. No, not at all? Oh, we have to do something. You would like to learn crypto? I think crypto is important. So Lasse and me will take this up, because more and more evidence is encrypted. And in the Internet of Things, we have encrypted communication, and we have to do something about this. So but you have had at least heard approximate hashes with Slobodan. So Slobodan explained everything about text and strings. Please now think vectors and images, right? Instead of having this a string, an image can be also considered a vector if you roll it off, like I try to explain. And then you can apply approximate hashes in a similar way as Slobodan applies it to strings. Yeah, same concepts. You know the basics. Yeah. Yeah. The challenge is the challenge for us is, right, we can teach you media forensics in addition, but then something else skips. So 2 years master are not enough to teach you everything what we think it's important. And then, of course, it's like scientific methodology and research project planning, which may be not content, but which are very important to get a nice master thesis, right? So, so authentication with watermarking as steganography and watermarking as active approaches, passive approaches, crypto and hash functions. And then, of course, forensics, where we do analysis on the pixel level in order to better understand. So you everybody knows from you what are forensic sciences and what we are aiming for. For the future, there are... Yes, please. Plays a very important role. I have it in the second part. Yes, very important. I will get to it. You want to take a media course, right? So, knock on my door. You can get one. So to answer this quickly, we always have the opportunity for specialization course, right? So if you say I die for media forensics, then we can do something in specialization course. Yeah, for now this is only to give you let's say an outlook on what else is out there. And as Lasse mentioned in the introductory of the class, we cannot teach you all the topics. And what I would like to share is some best practices from Netherlands Forensics Institute. We cooperate with them very closely, and they of course teach a lot of forensic experts, and they have a dedicated master program on forensic sciences general. It's also the blood and the DNA at NFI. Master course, like you are taking master in digital forensics. What do you think, after how many years are they allowed to testify in a court of law? Directly after their masters? What do you think?
5.
So, why is this? Because everybody knows that in a master degree you only can get the fundamentals. You have to specialize and to go into learning depths during practice and at the job. In NFI, there's a lot of quality control to educate their new employees the first 5 years. And classes like you are doing with Jeff this week, and how you will do with him in March, to have mock trials and mock cases where you pretend to have a real case and where you to pretend to testify in a court of law. This NFI is doing for over this 5 years with their new employees. So, please, we can give you only what is out there. And then you may come back and say, I would like to specialize in A or B. Yeah? So, then you can also specialize in crypto. Okay, so what I would like to mention, there are different definitions of forensic science out there. So you will they are kind of the same of different things. Ask Lasse which one he asks you in the exam. So I just put it up here. So at the end, it's not only the analysis of physical evidence, it's the analysis of digital evidence and digitalized physical evidence in our case, right? We are not dealing with the blood, but for instance with a picture of the blood patterns. We provide expert testimony, hopefully, and then of course evidence collection, recognition, analysis, preservation. Cyber forensics, for the repetition, for you, what are the definitions, what are the methodologies, and what we introduce now is a way of systematic or formal description. What we try to avoid, or let's say only have you or providing you on a general level in the machine learning class is the formal description of features and attributes. We can do the same in the forensics field. It's hardly done yet, because the bridge of forensic sciences in a classical way to machine analysis and feature vectors and feature attributes is often not given. What you see here now is an introduction of a systematic description of evidence in images, in videos, in file systems, network traffic, blood, DNA samples. If we introduce a formal description of our evidence, or at least the data that is eventual evidence after analysis, then it's easier and to perform a transition from the artifact and the effect that we are observing to the machine processing. When I mentioned before, please remember everything that you heard in the information security introduction. Now I tell you, please remember everything that you learn in machine learning, because now it becomes concrete. And these are examples for audio. This can be which frequency with wavelets, which dBA, dB volume and amplitude. This can be sampling rate. This can be sound, speak, noise, music. All features what you in machine learning try to describe. I heard about your current assignment. Please choose your own data set. Right? It's exactly here. There's the link. And those features and data sets of can be collected not only from malware or network traffic, but also from images, videos, and so on, or as we have here in the audio signal. Same as with Slurp.dan, we cannot teach you all in the class. We have a lot of introduction or additional literature where those who are interested can read more. Okay, how are you handling it? Do you have one longer break or shorter breaks? This is good? Yeah. Coffee. Good. Hello, hello again. We are back. We had a coffee and we had some inspiring discussions about the necessity and the beauty of machine learning and forensics. And we reflected briefly on the huge amount of data that we are confronted with, for instance, in Internet of Things, where we need machine learning to deal with the huge amount of data. But if you imagine all the images that are part of a 2 hour video stream and assume there is some pornographic material in Snow White copied in, that's a typical way you have pornographic material transferred and exchanged in very naive children's movies like Snow White, and having an investigator watching all the movies in order to identify the images, it's very time consuming, sometimes impossible. So machine learning and automatic image analysis can help, for instance, to spot those abnormal scenes. And this brings us back to our topic, where we now would like to reflect on a few approaches and examples on where image processing, automatic analysis can be used. And this is only the top of the iceberg. Yeah. Again, use your criminal mind and your investigative talents to extend the list. So, examples that we're... Ah, it was your cup. I have too much criminal fantasy. stuff we would like to reflect on. First one is image enhancement, as for example video stabilization, which is now used, I think, even in our mobile cameras, where 3 pictures are being taken in order to get rid of the jitter in our hands. How is this being done? Next example, image analysis is not only used for digital images, but can also be used to analyze fraud of paintings like Munch or Van Gogh's. But of course, in doing this, we need to digitize physical evidence. The physical image need to be digitalized. We are looking at digital image forensics, where images are being being manipulated, like we had the examples when the crowd scene has been copied into the patches in order to remove the protest sign. Where images have been copied, pasted, and so on. And the last thing is related to video forensics, as for example, the typical on surveillance cameras. Further examples, there I have been also done a huge study with Zeno Gerrits from Netherlands Forensic Institute. His first author is Camera Identification. Assume you find a digital image on, I don't want to stress, but pornographic material is the one of the biggest cases. You find pornographic material on one scene, and you find a camera or mobile phone on another scene. And you ask yourself, is this picture taken with this particular camera? Because we have seen who has been using the camera. And unfortunately, all the metadata is washed, right? So there is nothing in the image headers anymore that allows us to recognize camera, model, location, timestamp, and so on. Each camera, and I will go into physics a little bit later, has a particular pattern, and you can identify camera based on the pattern that is intrinsically included in those scenes. For example, if one image element is being broken, so you would have a black pixel. Maybe you have seen black pixel or white pixels on your monitor in the past. Same happens to cameras. So you can use this for camera identification. You can use it also for noise detection, image manipulation, and talking about media forensics. What about printers? Printers are medias also to reproduce images. And okay, today a lot of printers have protection mechanisms to print money, right? But let's assume a threatening letter has been printed. Can we use the picture of the threatening letter, the visual appearance of the threatening letter, in order to identify the printer? It depends. You know this already, right? So, in some cases, one can analysis. So, the first thing what I would like to mention or go a little bit into more detail is video image stabilization. What it's good for, it's good for to automatically correct. The most typical is the jitter, what you have, for instance, in your hand if you take the picture, where civil images are taken. That's why, for instance, with our digital cameras, I think on iPhone, they take three pictures, and then they compute an average based on three pictures in order to get rid of the, let's say, of the plot to the movement. And the point is that the jitter can be, as an example, can be on one hand as caused by the hand where we hold the camera, but like if we are taking a sample of a starting rocket, or this is in Raumschiff, space shuttle. Now you know where I'm coming from. The space shuttle there is, and the other point. Is that the camera is very fixed, but the target that we want to digitize or is moving, like the space shuttle. So it doesn't matter on wider object or target or camera are moving, the principle applied in the image processing are the same. And what you are doing is you take several pictures of the object. That's why I mentioned three. If we have video with more frames per second or per minute, then even better. And those different pictures are aimed to be aligned on each other, where an let's say averaging algorithm allows you to register similar points, and based on where you have most of the image points activation, you determine where are the edges. It's a whole class on image processing. I don't stay cool if you are not getting everything. So, take-home message, you need several images, you put them on top of each other, and by this you can remove the blurring of movements. If you have only one, it doesn't work. That's when I said the difference between video or civil images and still images. You need more images in order to have this functioning. So at least two or more images needed. And the in the image processing community, it's an own study field on how to do those image registration in the best possible way. Yeah? For details, we need to have more time, which I don't have. But the main message is civil images putting on top of each other. And as Lasse and Stefan told you, what are the best Google, what are Forensicator's best friend? Ah, much too special. Google. Why? Because the community is developing so many tools out there that you could use eventually. Yeah? You may find timeline. If you have a timeline problem, you may even find super timeline. But eventually, you need to have a problem related to image registration. And as a forensicator, you have no time to program your own. Not an advanced algorithm like this. So then you ask your best forensic toolkit, Google, in order to help you. Remember image registration, image stabilization, and you need to have more than one image. Otherwise it doesn't work. I mentioned earlier runaway car, very important field, very often being used. License plate recognition is one of the very old problems, and the question is, how can the toll road read good images? They usually take 3, 4, 5 pictures of the license plate while you are passing through. They do image enhancement via image registration because the road might be bumpy, right? And then you increase the readability of the license plates. Now I can share a secret with you. No, it's not a secret. When I was your age, 20 years back, we have developed automatic license plate recognition for German police, and the Angela Merkel, German Chancellor, when she wants to enter in the morning her office, her license plate is checked and registered with our software.
Cool.
Very cool. And this knowledge you can use today if you run track cars, right? If there is some shooting and you follow a car and you need to go close, but not too close, to check the license plate. For instance, list of stolen cars, stolen license plates, is the technology needed. Again, you don't need to program it yourself. This is too complicated to just write a Python script to solve the case. There you need to have more tools, but it's available. There's another example, and what I wanted what is pointed out here. For image registration, did you try to find similar points in order to have the alignment of subsequent images, right? The list of examples is long. Here's for improving homemade videos. I think stick with the license plate recognition for runaway cars, checking, then automatically checking with registered. This is enough for you to remember. The other one, and I mentioned this also earlier, is quality improvement for CTV, for surveillance cameras. Surveillance cameras are usually very low quality cameras, so that you have often a problem also under different under bad lighting conditions. And by doing image registration, so taking from the video sequence different images from the sequence and trying to align them, you are able to differentiate foreground and background much better. So it's not only used for stabilization, but also for improving bad contrast, images with bad contrast, so where everything is kind of grayish or blackish, in order to improve the visual appearance of the image, improve contrast in particular. Examples for those who are interested are given under the different examples. The next one is art authentication, and what is very interesting, you may have heard about ColorLab here. So ColorLab uses art authentication as a research domain. So they have they work, for instance, with Louvre in Paris. They have been working with the National Gallery here in Norway, and one of the paintings that they analyzed was based on was the scream from Munch. Their techniques are primarily in the analog domain, using different lighting techniques, as for example ultraviolet light. What we can do with digital image processing, digital image forensics, is we can enhance their techniques, because we have a lot of methodologies, which I'm going to explain a little bit, in order to support and to go deeper in an objective analysis of the images. Some examples are here, but this list is not complete. So for art authentication, here it's an quite old painting. Is techniques, as for example, the recognition of faces. Quite interesting, because it's a combination of art analysis, biometrics, biometric technology, and image forensics. Face recognition techniques. Who's taking biometrics course? No. Yes, course. If you are interested, so like with crypto, biometrics is also very useful for forensics. For instance, if you have seen the video surveillance, if you have done all the effort in order to make the person on the surveillance video visible, you could then apply video forensics and biometrics to recognize the faces. So biometrics forensics go close, where biometrics focuses on the human aspects, and we in forensics would do everything, right? Here for odd authentication, biometrics is being used in order to locate images. And what typical happens is that if somebody copies the image, there might be some a wrong positioning of the images. So this is one aspect. If you have a skilled searcher, of course, this he gets right. Then in video in art forensics is possible to analyze the texture. Texture is the structure of surfaces, like we have on the table here, where we use image analysis in order to analyze the pattern or the frequency on how strokes and in the paint are drawn. There's a very famous professor in the Netherlands who studied the forgery of of Van Gogh paintings, for example. So you know Van Gogh has this very thick pasty pen strokes, which can be used for analysis. Can someone come up with other ideas on using image forensics for art? Yeah? Very good. Yes? Very good. I have worked on this myself. let's say, MoMA ships their paintings to Berlin or Paris, and those paintings are very expensive, right? So the question is, are those paintings are damaged during transport? And who shall pay for it? I mean, this is not our task, right? Our task is to recognize are those paintings are being damaged. So the way to do this, so it's not a forensics case in the sense of fraud, it's a forensics case in the sense of insurance fraud, for example. Is pictures are taken from the original in the States still. And in this particular case, images are taken with UV light, because then you see the cracks, and the cracks are very like our skin, very, let's say, original lines, and they are stored like a fingerprint. That's why it would be cool if you take biometrics. They are stored like a fingerprint as the reference. This is how our valuable painting looked like before transport to Paris. When they're in Paris, they take another picture and then they count the cracks. Oops, there are no cracks any longer. What happened? Picture has been exchanged by a copy. Or there are other cracks. Then the question is the original set of cracks still there? Then it's okay. Then it's the question how much damage has been done, and is this a case for the insurance, or is it a completely different set of cracks? Then it might be again fraud. So someone has changed the painting. So very good example. So it's done indeed like this was an example. And we developed it for the German police. So, other example. How do we find stolen Munch paintings? I mean, someone has to do the job. How do they do it? Now, assume this is my mobile camera. I'm a field investigator. I'm going over the flea market. No? Now I have a problem. Thank you for your attention. No, we are not yet. Don't joke about this when I fix it. So, the point is stolen art. To be honest, I love this mouse. Because it's so sensitive, so I don't need to move much, but in this setting it's not so. There we are again. So stolen art is being stolen art is being you have everything. Stolen art is being analyzed by investigators going over flea market auctions and taking very discreet images of the art objects that are on sale. And while they are just walking and talking and seemingly doing nothing, the images are uploaded to a central database where stolen art objects are registered. The computer performs an automated image retrieval. And while the investigator is on the flea market, he gets a signal back on the mobile phone. Bing, 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 bing. Could be our object. And then it's up to him with his investigative tactics to get hold of the image or of the painting. Or the we had also 3D objects. Now you would say, it's not really digital forensics. Well, not in the traditional sense, but it's falling now under the responsibilities of the high-tech crime units in order to provide the technology. Same could be, it's not on the flea market, somebody posts pictures on Facebook. Or on Finn. So there's a lot of... Do they like each other? Linkage between video analysis and contemporary crime investigation. So far for the images, art objects. Let's go back into the digital main. Duplicating. As an example, to go quickly over it, what I mentioned you with the UV picture taken in comparison, this can be also easily used for looking whether somebody has sprayed over an originally painting. Our color people look also then on the fluorescence of paintings. Composition of persons, I mentioned, cloning I mentioned, and the analysis of videos can be, for instance, similar as we compare videos with before and after. We can, as we compare images before and after, we can compare videos within kind of before and after techniques. How image processing is being done pixel wise, we go later on. So, I would say this. So far, on the examples, in the second half, I would say this is the appetizer, and in the second half, I would like to go more into technologies. What are digital images? How they are composed? Which influence has compression? What are different color domains? How can you play with digital images yourself? Yeah? Good. Another coffee. Ah, good. Yes, it's a yeah, it's a intense field of research. Yeah. Yes. So, and it's fun. fetish. Ready? Okay. Now, in the first part, we have been talking about image and video is kind of abstract, and we talked a little bit about applications and use cases. Now, I would like to give you the, let's say, a few fundamental things on what digital images are. So, because at the end it's a matrix or it's a vector, you can manipulate like anything else. And he was smiling at me. So, not so much about the content as about, to start with, this is a picture, right, in the physical world. And we try to digitize it in order to analyze it, in case of our paintings or on our license plate recognition and so on. And this one is a handwritten document. It's even on square paper. And this, for example, would be a nice case. It would be, assume it's a threatening note. You would digitize this and you would try to identify on who has been written the note. So, and when we are going into the details now, I would like you always to swap your mental mind between what is in the physical world, what is physical image or document, and what is digital, and what becomes the difference, right? So, and the first thing what we need to do is we need to get the thing into the computer. There is no slot to put it in. So, we need digitalization techniques, image sensors, in order to turn the physical object into an image representation in the computer. And, I mean, it's kindergarten, right? The classicals are cameras and our mobile phones. It's a high digital camera, but it's also in scanner, image scanner, or like we have the photocopy, under the assumption that it's digital. But image forming devices, and in particular in forensics, and I stress now you as the future forensic investigators, image forming devices can be also microscopes that, for instance, have electron beams sensing a surface. You beam electrons on a surface, they are reflected, and the reflection and the time delay between sending and receiving leads to sensing three-dimensional pictures. Yeah? So open your mind on what are image forming devices. For now and for the rest of this, the rest of the class today, I will focus on visual images taken by electrocharged coupled devices, CCD cameras. We will talk about the camera, where CCDs are a matrix. I have pictures for you in a second. But they are also not matrices, but like in a scanner, there's only one line. And the picture or the document is scanned by taking one line after the other. This is when you open the scanner and have the slide beam, right? So there are different ways on creating images. You have now traveling on the airport when you have your body checks. I mean, you are traveling and you need to stand. There's also a line that scans. So they don't take a full picture, they take it step by step in a line. So, gives you a first additional example images for security, right? Control on security checks on airports. So let's focus on this one. Ships and cameras look like this. Well, break your phone and look into it, or you have a broken one. Where are they located? They are usually located at the end of the camera, and you have all the lenses in the front with the different prisms in order to break and mirror images, or the light that's beaming in. In order to project it on the larger scene on the small ship at the end. This is optics class. Optics, physics, now is a Wiedergonde, right? What happens? On these ships that we have just seen, those that are a small field, you have image sensors. Like a mosaic again. Which form an image? Each of those little sensors becomes one image element, one pixel later on. How many pixels has a 4 million image camera? Now we have 20 million, right? Has 20 million those elements. So it would then be 5,000 times something. That's a little older one. But I mean, you get a twist. So what happened in each of those elements? Again, physics, Wiedergonde. Light folds on is falling on in light sensitive material, and in and current is generated, which leads to voltage differences. And this happens now 4 million or 20 million times in parallel. How much is generated? Well, it depends, and it depends on how dark or how light the objects are. Any guess on, and where does the color come from? It's only volt, and volt is not red or blue. Mapping between the wavelengths, okay. Sounds good. Ever thought about it? No. I mean, you use it every time to make your selfie. I mean, come on. Right? So, there is something with wavelengths, yes, and there is something, depending on wavelengths, some voltage is induced. But how do we tell sensor, let's say this one here, react to wavelengths in the red spectrum? Okay, so let's start easy. We get there. So I like that you come with wavelengths. There is something with wavelengths, but it's not that straight as it sounds. The first thing is what is very important to remember: digital images are discrete or even digital things, objects, or representations of the physical world. There is no smooth handwriting anymore. And I liked, I picked this one because there is the squares from the paper, right? The squares of the paper, you could imagine, represents one square of a sensor. And your handwriting is not that analog, going straight between the pixels. So a pixel can be on or off, or can have some value or some shade of gray. Still no color. Because photonic photo effect depends only on current or not current. Nobody differentiates between wavelengths there. We get later to the wavelengths. So, and in, since it would be much too complex to have analog image values, so the shade of gray, those gray values are also being digitized, which are the gray levels. And depending on how many bits, I started with 8-bit, now then we had 16-bit, today every hour have 64-bit processing, 64-bit images. We have 64-bit in order to represent, first of all, only gray, no color yet. So, from the analog world, our smiley face here, we turn him into little mosaic stones and in shades of gray, digitized. Images have spatial and intensity resolution. Spatial on how many pixel elements do we have in X and Y? How many pixels are per inch or per centimeter? And in the intensity, how many shades of gray do we have in order to represent this nice smiley face? And this is exactly the problem what we have seen earlier in the introduction on the license plates. If we have too little pixels available, then we cannot represent the hand or the letters of the license plate, right? So this would be this example. If there's only one pixel for the O, well, then it's too little. So this is number one. Yes? I explain by a drawing. Let's go back to our voltage, right? And we have, let's say, volt, and we have the intensity. It can be in the analog range, you have something like this, and then you don't have values. Are you programming? Ah. I would say you turn double into integer. Every programmer understands the problem. Yes. So you have in volt, you could have, for instance, the value 0.01 and 0.0 as an example, if you digitize, that means you don't have those values, for example, after the comma anymore, or after the period, you round them. Pardon me? One or zero, yes. And we call it quantization. This would be, for instance, something like this. And then you only have those values. Yeah? Yeah, this would be, the blue one would be analog, and the red one would be digital. It would be discrete. What's the difference for everybody? What's the difference between discrete and digital? It's this. Our beamer is sleeping. Now it comes back. Discrete is if you have only one value quantized. It becomes digital if you have also those points. Discrete. Two times discrete is digital. Okay? So, I write here digital. If you have one axis analog and the other one discrete, it's a discrete signal. If it has both, let's say, the time axis and the value, discrete, then it becomes digital. A digital signal is at the point time t with a particular discrete value. Analog is at any arbitrary point in time, any arbitrary value. This was the classics. This is signal processing and fundamentals from physics. But it's so important in forensics, because this makes the difference whether you are able to find and retrieve evidence. It's the tiny details that matter. That's why I bother you with this. So what we are doing is the analog picture or the analog scene that we have, we turn into discrete values in terms of intensity, and we determine it in discrete values in terms of position, and we receive in the result a digital image signal. Both space and intensity are going to be turned into numerical values, which are at the end integer. Kind of for programmers, yeah. But don't mix up. Double is still a digital, right? You have only depending 64 or how many bit available. So, got it? And how does it look like? What it looks like if we have 300 dpi. This is what scanners usually do, or the old scanners did. Today, maybe it might be 600. Is for 1 inch, and this is the representation of 1 inch. There are 300 points. 300 points from our matrix. Yeah. right? And if you look at this, it looks nice. It looks nice. It only looks nice. I can tell you a secret if you want to fetch an image, if you want to fetch the signature of someone. No, you are not fetching. If you are fetching and characteristics are usually be seen and how those fine lines are. We call it feathering as a terminology in forensics. If you scan or digitize with 300 dpi, it's not enough. You cannot find a forgery. We need 600. What means 600? 600 dpi scanning does not mean that you can do some image manipulation where you put in some additional pixels so that it becomes more. It needs to be 600 originally hardware, we call it optical image elements. Because if they scan with 300 optical elements, CCDs elements, and then artificially blow it up to 600, well, you don't get additional information. The source only provided you the information seen with 300. You need to have 600 optical. And in my example, it doesn't make sense to show you 600 because our eye, I tell you, show you in a second, we don't see the optical, we don't see the difference. Yeah, our eye has limits. But we as humans see the effects on if we have only 50 pixels, if we have 100 pixels, or if we have 25. The 25 pixels is approximately an example that we had for the license plate, right? If we don't see the license plate anymore, cannot read it. And I mean, if you see the sequence, you can equally imagine how it would if we blow it up with 600. And I recommend you that you do something at home, like at school you had your own microscope and plate and saw the skin of some onion or whatever. Yeah, play yourself with it. So this is the effect of the resolution. Spatial. Tip, you are soon going to write your applications. And you need to send your credentials from your previous exams, right? You can scan with 150 dpi, and it looks good, sufficient for applications. You don't need more, because the human eye of the evaluator for the job interviews will not see it. There's no point to scan your document with 600 dpi and then have such a big document of 3 plus megabyte and more and don't get it to the wire. Yeah? You don't need more than what is sufficient to have a proper visual quality. So this is practical knowledge for life also. And here is an example what I tried to show you also on handwriting because it's so nice to see, right? Everybody can draw. This feathering information that you have, this is written with a ballpoint pen. There you have an average 5 to 7 pixels. So the information is quite lost. You don't see the fine details anymore. What can we see? 300 dpi means you have 12 lines or 12 pixels per 1 millimeter. So if you draw with a ballpoint pen, it's about 1 millimeter. Maybe less. With 600, you have 24 lines. Our human eye, however, can only differentiate 5 different lines per millimeter. Yeah, so that's why 150 is okay scanning. In forensics, let's say we do DNA, not DNA, we do blood pattern analysis, fiber analysis, fire analysis, all those things. And when we are using a microscope, 20 times increase what is on the microscope, or 110 times increase. 110 leads to 550 lines per millimeter. There you see quite a difference. Now you say, but I'm studying digital forensics. This is not digital forensics. Very important, high-tech crime units, this is where you end up, are supporting traditional forensic domains. They know all about the chemistry, but you know about the computers and the equipment. So that's why I'm bringing this here, and I have unfortunately seen too many things go wrong. For example, tattoo analysis. What resolution do you need to analyze in tattoo? Now, next thing. So we had spatial digitalization, and now we have this intensity discretization. And if I have another pen, then I can draw in, let's say here we have 6 values. Another way would be to have only 3. Yeah? Then we have less intensity values. We can also come up and have more. So it depends on your computing resources. I mean, computing resources are today less a problem. But how we digitize or how do we quantize in the intensity will reflect on how many details we can differentiate in the spatial as well as in the intensity domain. And what I provide you here is it can be a payment check. It's the old American Express, but you could also think about your passport. You could think about the expensive tickets from Spectrum with hologram and whatever payment. So if we are digitizing one of those checks with eight bits, these are the 8 bits from here, then we are able to have 265 different gray values. Well, it looks quite nice. Do we have only a binary image, meaning we have it on or off? Then it looks, well, a lot of details are going lost. Hello. And there are others. So now the question is, and how do we get color? We still have no color. We have gray value. We have intensities. And the point is that we have, for instance, no voltage and full voltage. Represented in a digital 255 or 0. And for color, the trick is that we are using not only one of those, but we are using three. So in order to capture the different wavelengths, we are using three sensors. And I go very back in one of the first pictures. So those lenses where I skimmed over in the beginning are also meant in order to split, like the prism test in physics you had, meant to split the incoming light beam according to the different wavelengths. And then you have one chip that captures the wavelengths that come from red, because the prisms are made in a way that you have one of the chips capturing only the red wavelengths, or the wavelengths that represent red, the next one for green and for blue. Color images are three chips. And now there comes a lesson for forensics. The best digital images for forensic purposes you are going to achieve with three chip cameras. Three chip cameras, there you have those little things, those chips, three times. Now you can imagine, pretty expensive, right? However, it brings the best quality. So for digitizing, I cannot show because I cannot afford a three-chip camera. So we are poor academics now. If you, for instance, want to analyze stroke crossings, for instance, if you have a contract with a signature on it and you would like to different, or the question is what comes first, the handwriting or the document or the printed document, then you need three chip cameras in order to analyze the line crossings. The advantage is that the three chip cameras in this, the price for the cameras used to be about 100,000 euro. Maybe now it's less. I'm not up to date about the latest prices. Maybe half today. So it's not, we cannot have it in mobile phones. Yeah? And the point is, it's not only the optics, it's not only the charging couple devices that is the price. The most expensive is the optics. And the positioning of the three chips so that the pixels are corresponding, right? If you want to capture his tip of the nose, then the tip of the nose needs to be exactly the same pixel in all the three chips to represent the color. So the alignment of the prisms and the alignment of the sensors is what it makes so expensive. So take home message, capturing very tiny details in forensics, you take a three-chip camera. What you find in most of the cases we talked earlier, you take one-chip cameras. Any ideas how this is done? Somehow everything needs to be on one charged couple device. May I show you first? On one chip cameras, the prism effect that filters the light beam all happens on one pixel element. And now I draw it. It's not nicely shown. So this is our matrix from our charged couple devices. And what we are going to have is This is now modern processing. You have the prism optics kind of glued on top of the charge coupling device. So this is one charge coupling device. They have the prism on glued red, blue, and two times green. What is the challenge? The challenge is that they are spatially off. They cannot be exactly positioned because they are, I mean, there is only a limit how close they can be. That means if you have a very sharp edge, you see the very sharp edge from slight different positions. But at the end, you combine the information in one image element. So it will always look a little bit blurred. I mean, to capture a nice smile with your mobile phone, it's fully sufficient. To capture a forgery of a passport, it's not sufficient. Yeah? You always have to. But each mobile phone has such a chip now in there. And the principle at the end is the same. So this is how we get colored images. So we have now three signals, either from a one chip or a three chip camera. And we mix at G and B, and depending on the mixing, we get those different colors. And much more, right? How many do we get? 32,000 for 8-bit color images, for example. Or now 16 million. And these are just examples on what are the color values or the gray values for each channel at G and B, and what are the whites and what are the intensities, so that you see the how it is coming together. Have you heard about index colors? Index colors, you may have used it because sometimes they said, if you prepare an image, they say save image for web. This is what the applications sometimes say. The challenge is that the originally color range, if you have a true three channel color images, has approximately 16 million color values, if I consider all the combinations of G and B. In terms of color images, one is falling back to only one image array, like in gray values, where the originally, let's say, gray values now become indexes. Index is just a pointer too. And the pointer is going to be one element in a palette with 256 colors. Not necessarily. And this is the big problem. And this is the big problem if we talk about forensic evidence. Some of the forensic experts think, oh, I found a cool way to make my image smaller because I have no money for a new hard drive. And they store the images as such index colors. I mean, it looks good in a way they still can print it and can present it in court, but they can hardly do any image analysis longer. Because what is stored is only a subset. 256 colors out of the 56 million. And how have they been selected? We don't know the algorithm. So somebody tampered, now I say tampered, with our evidence. Somebody artificially decided to choose some 556 colors out of the 6 million. So it's a complete falsification of the original evidence. There's a hall of research, so Color Lab here. They study and do the research, what are the algorithms to best choose those 506? I mean, it's good for media and printing and whatever, where you want to reduce the colors. But in forensics, we want to have as much information as possible. And we don't trust on an algorithm that eventually may fail. So data integrity means do not apply image reduction. It's a form of compression, right? Because it may falsify the image content and it may prevent us to replicate image analysis and so on. Human, I have pictures. No. Once again? The optic already removes colors, and I show you to which extent. I have it. Because this is also important if we talk about what happens in digitalization. We have information loss. So if you are that interested, then I would like to point out one thing. We have in one pixel, we have one red, one blue, and two green. And why is this? Why do we give more emphasis to green? Because the human eye is most perceptive to green. So that we have, so technique takes into account that we have information loss in the digitalization by turning the real world and the real-world color spectrum into a RGB color space. And they take care with this, but it still causes a lot of information loss. Give me 1 second, and I get there, and I show you. So how does the image look like? So if you are using Photoshop, GIMP for Linux user, and very nice open source image analysis program, you can visualize images by having, for instance, separated different color channels. So this is our now nice mountain scene. And somebody is fooling you here, has marked them red, green, and blue. If you have them in GIMP, you only see 3 gray value images. So the coloring was done by me. So to remind you, these are the channels. But RGB are only intensity levels for red, green and blue, like the gray values. And if you look open in color image, for instance in GIMP, and you separate the different channels, you have 3 query value images. And then you need to look which is the color level. In color research, I mean, this is again what Color Lab is doing. They are looking also for other color models. I would like you to be aware of this, but again, I cannot go into detail of different color levels, color models. Yeah, RGB is what our cameras and monitors see. And what is very important to remember, and I mentioned as an example the camera identification with the noisy pixels. So the message is each device, each chip perceives color differently. These are the normal differences in production, those CCD elements and the chips. And for this purpose, I usually play with this. So the primary area of the color ranges and the wavelength stays, but the sensitivity is natural variation. Depends on the production. And when we talk about different color models, then there's one big difference. Colors that we use in capturing devices, like the scanner or the camera, and the monitors to display, and colors that we use for printing. And what you have here as a starting point, it comes big on a, this we call it gamut. The big one is what the human eye is seeing, that's why we have this little eye here. The yellow little here is what our camera is seeing and our can monitor can represent. And the other one is what we can print. And then a big mess starts. Why do we see so much green? Yes, exactly. Exactly, because we have been living in the bush and we needed to differentiate while we were picking berries and while some wild animals were coming to chase us. So that's why our sensitivity for green is so developed, and that's why we have on our one chip camera two sensitivity for green in order to pull it a little bit more up here. But you see how much information goes lost, right? Never trust the digital image or be aware of what can go wrong. And now next big lesson for forensics. So we have the different cameras. Let's say was it orange t-shirt we have seen, or was it a red t-shirt, or what's a yellow t-shirt, and do we know? What we need to achieve is color calibration between different devices, if possible, and in particular if we have the equipment in the lab. And of course, if we bring evidence in a court of law and we print our video or we print our image evidence to the judge and the jury, then it also should still be pink and not violet or dark red because our printer was not calibrated properly. So color calibration between the different devices, inferencing is one of the very important things. And coming back to our art, if you look, for instance, on funding art, or if you're looking for comparison art for the insurance cases I mentioned earlier, then you need to make sure that the same colors or intensities appear depending on which device you have been using. And at the end, it's more complex. It's not only the device. So ladies who go shopping know the t-shirt or the dress looked very nice with the artificial light in the shop. And if you go out to sunlight, it looks ugly. So this all plays together, yeah? But it's going too far. I only want to stress the device calibration here. And let's say media industry has been taking care for it. We don't need to reinvent the wheel, but we need to bring those technologies into forensics, which is color transformation, which is standardized by International Color Consortium to have an alignment of color intensities between how we capture the color, how we print the color, and how we relate the color to the real physical world. And this is done by so-called color profiles and color calibration sheets and color matching methods and color management. And again, it's a whole field of research by itself on how to do those transformation, and this is what research is done by the Color Lab. So you are only users for it, the same as you are users of machine learning techniques, right? Nobody wants you to invent new methodology, but you need to have fundamental knowledge in order to apply it in the proper way, and to not lose information or create artifacts just because you have not applied the technology in a proper way. So, and there we have the big, this is your take-home picture, right? On what is reality, what devices see in RGB, and what devices are able to print. And the big challenge is how our color transformations are done between the captured color range and if you print in order to go to the court, as an example. And there are different mappings, and the different mappings have all, let's say, advantages and disadvantages, and the best thing as a take-home message is color projection, where you project colors from the RGB space in this cyan, magenta, yellow space. K is for stands for black and regulates the darkness or blackness. And this is what you have also the cartouche in your printer. If you have your inkjet printer at home when you buy inkjets. So, and here's a nice little example. Also, again, the question what humans see and what the computers is seeing. If you have, I mean, this is exaggerated in order to visualize the effect, right? If you have, for instance, very tiny details in the original scene, so in the physical domain, and you digitize it, then you have a color clipping from approximately this area into this area that is sensitive for the cameras, and then, for instance, we cannot differentiate the details anymore, right? So, meaning you don't see the man among the bush or the trees does not necessarily mean that there was no man. That's the translation for forensics. The camera may have not been sensitive to it. And there are a lot of research in other domains on how sensitive we are. Yeah, not my field. So I need to make you aware, don't trust the image, right? In particular, not if there's something with green. So how do we get our hands dirty? I strongly recommend you download GIMP. GIMP is the nicest tool because it's a combination of used for media and also for science, so you find also more the scientific terminology. Under Mac, I used to use ImageJ, which is a purely Java-based image manipulation program, where you can, I think you need a feel and dirty hands with images. To look at tables, to look at channels, to look at pixels, to look at details. Take a picture of your fingerprints, see what you see. Think like this. Have a forensic criminal mind. So not the wedding photos, I mean. You can play with color adjustment or tone adjustment, which is the most simplest form on color transformation to increase contrasts. You can increase and play with tonal adjustment per channel if you have color images, if you increase or suppress. You can change color models. Take home message, one of the color models that we have been using, which turned out to be one of the most reliable, is LRB. It's an artificially created color model where you have the color angle between the color sphere in a horizontal plane and then the intensities or darkness in Z direction. And so I think nothing can help you as much as playing with GIMP or a similar tool to get this feel for images. I cannot give you this in theory. And end of the lesson, device calibration is done. I have it even here, LRB. Device calibration is done with so-called ICC profiles, ICC from International Color Consortium. And this is a pre-printed calibration sheet. They are for, let's say, for home office use. There's a little targets on a special paper where the colors are printed under strictly controlled conditions. This is from Kodak. So Kodak has been mixing under very controlled conditions. The colors have been printing it. And then you have this card, and you can take a picture with your scanner or your camera. And then you can see how, for instance, are the spray values are represented. Is it the same light, same gray here in the middle, or is it a little bit more intense or less intense? And then for the tree ship, you can measure the colors that are on the target. And how shall you know what is the right color? Where's the reference? So the references together, together with the piece of paper, or for, let's say, high profile settings, for instance, color analysis, big problem for identifying stolen cars, pre-sprayed, painted cars. They are not using papers as calibration sheets. They are using ceramic plates. Because paper, you know, if you put the paper in the sunlight or have it for months hanging in the humidity of the room, so the color fades and the paper changes, right? Ceramic plates are more robust to environmental influences and color shading. So those references are combined with a reference file which comes on a CD or you can download in the internet, where you have the exact value that is supposed to be represented, registered. So going back, let's say take one in the middle, 11, this is supposed gray value 127, it's 50% gray. And if you have been using your camera or scanner and you look what was measured or captured by your camera, it needs to be 127 or 50%. If it's 60 or if it's 40, your camera is not properly calibrated. So, and you can compare on what is scanned with your camera or captured with your camera with what is printed in the reference file. It's simple table comparison, right? And if they don't match, you have to do something. And what you do is the so-called color transformation, where nice software takes care for you, and as a take-home message, and those who are interested, little color management tool, open source library does the job for you. You only need to feed a target or reference sheet and capture it, and then they do the calculation for you. This is here a little color management system. And this is the representation target color sheet. This is done with the manufacturer, where they create the reference file. This is done with your own device at home. Little color management does the calculation and provides you an ICC color profile, International Color Consortium profile. And this is used, for instance, when you buy now an expensive monitor. They ask you, do you want to have your color calibrated? They create those files. It's not this advanced and this accurate, because this the media needs and forensic needs. You don't need it for your, or in this extent, for your calibration at home. But the principle is the same. So, and with this file, this is a table that is then stored to always correct the colors for future evidence capture. The challenge is, can you do it once and it's good forever? Bad news, no, because the lamps, for instance, and the sensitivity of the CCD elements or of the light is changing, and for different aging of the CCD or different lighting conditions, you need different profiles. Very important for evidence capture. Like paint, of course. So, this is my last slide. I could talk for hours. We have not been talking about capturing in the internet, image capture in the internet, image comparison, image retrieval. We could have, like in the malware, a whole course for this. Do we have time for this? Yes. Questions, feedback. Cool. So I would love to do it, and I know that we are not normal, right? But it comes a little bit from experience. I have been working for police in Germany since 95. Who has been born then? since 95, and I have been teaching the German police on this, because they didn't know. And it came at a time when they just said, oops, we can do something with computers. And unfortunately, there are not many in the world, as you say, who teach something like this. But everybody uses mobile devices. Everybody takes selfies. We see images taken everywhere. Images are more and more appearing in court cases. But unfortunately, wrong conclusions are being taken in court cases because of not proper analysis and handling of images. And this I would like to try to avoid. Or, yeah.
Are you saying that if there is enough interest now soon to get this as a collective subject?
This is what we're thinking about. So I have offered. When. This class here now, I have been teaching last year myself, or all the years before, and now we have Lasse and everybody on board, so I have a little bit time. Do I have? No, I have no time. But let's say we are thinking out loud in order to develop a content analysis course, something specialization like we have the malware course. You are practical. I like this. Very excellent. I think I need to have a feel that I can fill the classroom. So like in the malware class. So if there's only one, so we can do a specialization course, right? For this, I don't need a classroom. Offered. Well, thank you. How many are would willing to do it? Yeah. Well, at least you have my witness. Also for remote students, if you're interested that this course is going to become reality in the next years, sooner than later, please let us know, send a message via the discourse so that Lasse and me can have an overview, because it costs time and resources to develop it, and we would take the effort if you are truly interested. So we think there is a demand, but sometimes people know that they should know. That's, I think, there we are the edge. Yes. Yes. So question, if you have, for instance, I missed the picture, how does JPEG compression work? What is lossless compression versus non-lossless compression? Can I recognize based on compression from which camera does it come? Yes, you can. Things like this, yeah, there is so much more. Yeah, ideas. Criminal mind. I need your fantasy. Forensics is a very creative job. Yeah? You have to think out of the box. There's no standard solution. Every time it's new. Moving, yes. Also, you talk about image content and you only transfer what is moving. There's no point to transmit in each frame this corner, right? So you only need my hand that is waving to you. So there's a lot of things with application to forensics, yeah? So if you want to be a general image processing analyst and want to go to media, you are wrong in this room. If you want to use video and image analysis to solve crime, here you are. Yeah, there's a difference. I'm not making pictures look good. It's... Yes. Yes. Yeah. There's a trade-off. That's why I told you about quality of image capture. For instance, you cannot do a forensic analysis anymore if the quality is so bad. I mean, face is just another example, exactly. Yeah. I'm empty. Good. Tak for idag. Yes. Yes. Good. Have fun. And I would be happy to get some feedback. And you can send it anonymous. So if you're shy.